We don't need Nate. Let's get rid of him. Shed the dead weight.
You say that, but now we have to record an intro.
That's true. All right. Okay. Welcome back to the Hoops Temple Pod. I'm Aaron Schroeder. I'll be your host today. Given Nate is not here, but I'm joined by Dylan Williamson. Dylan, how are you?
Doing good, man. Apparently there's some sort of event going on in the US that I don't know about. is it a big, an important time?
It is an important time. What do you do on the third week of November?
You know, we don't have Thanksgiving, but Black Friday is permeating our culture. We don't get like the wholesome part. You know, we don't get family dinners and thankfulness, but we do get intense consumerism.
Hey, that's part of it. My mom always used to leave Thanksgiving dinner early to go shopping. We lost Nate to the horrible fate of having dinner with his in-laws for Thanksgiving.
Oh, man.
We may never see him again. And if we don't, I hope you enjoyed this podcast because that's all we're going to have left.
Mm.
We have a very young NBA season. We have lots of super small sample sizes. Some teams may be overachieving, some teams underachieving. Anyone standing out to start for you, Don?
Obviously, the Jazz have been absurd. Spurs have been doing well as well. But the big story, which I have to come on here and eat crow because I owe you an apology. The Sacramento Kings have been awesome. And before the season, you made a great sales pitch on why the Kings would be great. And one thing that I really underrated, which you were correct on, is that the offense was going to be awesome.
The Kings could outscore anybody at this point.
Yeah.
I had hoped for, in a best case scenario, an average offense, an average defense. Let's try to win 40 games. But we've gone in both directions where we have a hard defense is horrible. We can't stop anybody. But also, as of right now, I mean, by net rating, they're one of the 10 best teams in the league.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at some of the indicators, it's like, even though, like you said, the personnel is not good, so you're never going to be able to like defend the rim or, you know, contain penetration, those sorts of things. And they really haven't. They're 29th in the league in opponent effective field goal percentage. So opponents shoot a really high percentage against them. But some of the other four factors have been really good. So the things that they do have the personnel to do, which is defensive rebound, they're number two in the league per cleaning the glass in opponent offensive rebound percentage. So they're not giving up second chance points. And they're also above average in fouling and in forcing turnovers. So the things that they do have the personnel to do, they have been able to do. It's just that the opponents shoot an incredibly high percentage, so the defense still ends up being awful at 26th in the league.
There is a stat I had seen, and this was early in the season. We were still like 1-4, 1-5, whatever it got to. Yeah, I don't know what the numbers are like now, but essentially the Kings were allowing the least amount of wide-open threes in the entire league.
Mm.
But teams are shooting the highest percentage on that tiny amount. And so I think we are doing a great job driving guys off the three-point line. Whether that means they're just dunking on Sabonis is a different story, but that's bound to come down a little bit.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. One thing that I talk about a lot is that opponent three-point percentage is something that's not really predictive, and that over the course of a season, it generally will regress to the mean. And the way that you stop your opponents from making a lot of threes is just stop them from taking a lot of threes. And that's something that Brown has been able to really do well with this team, where they allow a really small amount of three-pointers. It's just unfortunate that opponents are shooting like 39% on them. And so as that comes down to the league average, which, you know, is probably like in the mid-30s, opponent field goal percentage should actually come down and the defense should get better.
It should. And I think those first four games, the rotations were still getting figured out. I went to the Kings opener. We started Casey Akpala, and he sucked.
Yeah,
that was stupid. I don't know what that was about. When they said they announced he was starting, I just audibly was like, "What the hell?" And then he was bad, and then he never played again. I'm like, I could have told you that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah,
I think Brown got a little too into like, we're gonna have a defensive identity. Here's a good defensive player. By the way, he can't do anything else. Also, Rashawn Holmes being just not an NBA-caliber player and replacing him with Chimezie Metu, who has been an NBA-caliber player, we've been able to go to the bench and not just immediately fall apart. Last time I was on, you had mentioned the Kings' starting rotation was just the best in the league. Like, they were killing teams, but then their bench was miserable. So to kind of see that go over has been great. And even heading into next game, we're going Detroit to Memphis without Ja or Desmond Bane. This could get great.
Yeah. And in the De'Aaron Fox era, they've actually been pretty good on offense, even under Luke Walton. And the way that they've been able to do that is a lot of transition. And they're running off a lot of live rebounds. And part of that is Fox, but also as part of that is Domantas Sabonis, who's one, a really good ball handler for a big. He's able to grab and go himself, and is also a really good passer. So he can get those sort of, you know, Lamar Odom style outlets going. But what's also interesting is that the Kings are taking a lot more threes this year. And they're converting at like a sort of a, you know, an average rate, but even an average percentage from three is still a pretty good shot. And so one thing that's been able to contribute to them having a really good offense is that they're shooting more threes as well. So even their half-court offense has been awesome.
When we hired Luke Walton, one of the first things he said was he wanted to slow the pace down and practice our half-court offense. And immediately, I'm like, that's stupid. That's dumb. You don't have the personnel to do that. We just won a bunch of games with Dave Yeager just pushing the pace and just who cares about defense and let's get in transition and make teams run with us. And to immediately go away from that hurt us and come back to that has been really nice. How have your Clippers been? Not exactly the offensive show that the Kings have been. Injuries kind of nagging, but what have you seen?
Yeah, I mean, it has been a little bit tough with Kawhi. He's been a big, you know, spanner in the works. I mean, coming into the season, the fans and even like a lot of people covering the team knew is that like Kawhi was ready to go. And then we start the season and he's coming off the bench and then plays like 2.5 games and then he's out again. And so there's been like a lot of inconsistency for us with injuries. And just like another random thing is dudes forgetting like how to shoot. Like Norm Powell's a career almost 40% shooter. And he's shooting like in the 20s. And even like Reggie Jackson, who's, you know, sort of a hot and cold guy. And last night against the Spurs, he was hot, but he's been really cold all season. But as that comes back to earth a little bit, we should start to see some wins. And we've come right a little bit. So we're 5-3 in our last eight. We're 10-7 overall, back in the playoffs, positive net rating. And thankfully, the offense is actually coming along. And the defense has still been awesome. So last 2 weeks, 16th in the league at 112 points per 100 possessions is still not amazing, but you pair that with a top three defense and you contrast that against the start of the season where, you know, we were struggling. You know, we couldn't even get above 110 per 100. So things are starting to look better.
I have a stupid question and I don't have the numbers for this. I just thought of this at work earlier. I was like, I'm going to ask Dylan this. What do you think has happened per minutes? Most minutes this season, Kawhi spent on the court playing, or Joel Embiid spent on the ground.
So you don't have the stats on this?
I do not. But every time I watch Joel Embiid play, he's on the ground. That yeah. Dude just lives on his back, on the ground. And that kind of play style where Embiid just lives on the ground for at least 20 of the 48 minutes of a basketball game, those calls dry up in the playoffs. You can't do that.
Yeah.
In the second round, in the third round, even in the first round, if it gets to that.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen it before. Like, that's the innate sort of detriment to this Embiid and Harden play style, which works really well in the regular season. You know, when you're going up against a random team starting center or guys who don't have time to read the scouting report and learn the tendencies on how you draw these fouls, like getting 10 free throws per game from both of those guys in the regular season is a reliable way to get to really good offense. But it does dry up in the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see whether they can overcome it or what they can even do to address it. And another thing on Embiid, like spending so much time on the ground, is obviously the transition defense is terrible. And the Sixers have massively underperformed defensively. And he is not contributing to a good defense when he used to be like an all NBA level defensive player. And he hasn't been that this year.
That's true. Looking back to last season, because when you get to the first month, some teams start hot, the close games fall a certain way. You haven't really had like the cream rise to the top yet. Last year, November 20th, 2021, these were the top six seeds in the East. I'm just going to read these to you. Number one was Brooklyn, then Chicago, Washington, Miami, New York, and Charlotte. That's a hell of a top six there. Those are the playoff teams in the East after a month. And basically all of those. I mean, Brooklyn got just decimated by injuries, and same with Chicago and Washington. Turns out they were never good. Miami kind of held the fourth seed area. The Knicks and Charlotte both fell into nothingness, essentially. Mm. But this is my short way of saying that I don't buy into the Blazers.
Yeah. Yes.
They're not going to be one of the four best teams out west. They're 10-6. They should be 9-7. They have the 11th best net rating.
Yeah. And what's interesting is if you filter out garbage time, their net rating is a plus 0.7, which is 16th in the league, which projects for about 42, 43 wins. And so they are massively outperforming their point differential at the moment. That's what Chicago was doing last year. That's how they managed to get above those wins. You know, they had a point differential of like a 500 team, maybe a little bit better early in the season. And they just won close games, which is what Portland's doing at the moment. I mean, they might be like a really good analog for Portland.
I mean, they're two games out of the 9 seed. It's just two wins the other way, and I don't think we even care. One of which is just a bullshit win against the Kings, in which the refs just gave it to them.
Yeah.
But I'm not mad about that at all. That didn't...
Yeah.
Do you think if we redid the top 100, Russell Westbrook would be on it?
No. I don't think so. Do you?
All right, cool. Just checking. Just check. No, I don't think so. I just wanted to check in. Just a temperature check. Because he hasn't been unplayable. I think he's been at least like an average player. But at the same time, it's like, all right, the ceiling on Westbrook is you can bring him off the bench and he puts up some nice numbers and plays pretty well on the worst team in the league.
Yeah. When we were doing our top 100, that was kind of what we were expecting from him. You know, we didn't expect him to come out and be literally the worst player in the NBA.
If only Nate was here, we could bash on the Lakers more. It's just more fun when he's here. If he could just come in and we could be like, the Lakers are the worst team in the league, and then he can go back to Thanksgiving dinner.
Maybe he could live stream us over the Thanksgiving dinner.
That's true.
Like, you don't have to have in-law conversations. Just he can live stream us bagging on the Lakers.
Before the season started, we had tried to gauge, okay, who are like the middling teams that might just rip the Band-Aid off and get really bad. And I think Portland's kind of avoided that. It would take just a massive downturn to wear off the high of a good start. But I think Chicago's in that conversation.
Mm.
I mean, they have to be. They have to be at this point. I mean, by net rating, they're the 23rd best team in the league. They're 6-10. It's a core that's not going anywhere. You can't really build around it, because if you built around it, you just add players better than the ones that are on the roster.
Yeah.
You start looking at the LaVine, DeRozan, even some of the smaller pieces like Alonzo Ball, like a Vucevic on the trade market come February.
I think Nate and I actually talked about this last week, but one thing that we mentioned is that there aren't a lot of good players on bad teams that could be traded, but like DeMar and LaVine are two guys. I think one thing that's really holding them back is Lonzo's injury. You talk about putting players around them to help out. And like, what would those kind of players be? It'd be basically Lonzo Ball, like a point guard who can maybe push the tempo but doesn't need the ball all the time, can spot up and can defend. And that's basically what he is.
Can you tell me why the Hornets are more focused on developing and playing Mason Plumlee over Mark Williams? They drafted that guy 13th overall and he's not playing, and they're playing Mason. Is it Mason? It's Mason, yeah. They'll mix up my Plumlees. They're playing Mason 28 minutes a game, and Mark Williams has played 13 minutes all season.
Well, is that at 13 minutes the entire season?
The entire season, he is just straight up not playing.
Oh, man, I feel like even Wiseman's played more than that.
Wiseman has been awful. I was texting Nate a little bit earlier today. He said he's been calling him Marvin Bagley IV. Just his successor. That's good.
That's a good one.
I had gotten a comment on one of my TikToks asking what I thought about a Poeltl for Wiseman deal, or essentially the Warriors have to throw in a bunch of picks, which I like the idea. I think it would mean that Draymond gets moved. That's a whole other conversation.
Mm.
I don't think anyone wants James Wiseman. I keep on going back to, oh, he has the tools.
Mm.
No shit, he has the tools. He was the second overall pick. He's a 7-foot like athletic freak. Mm. Like, that's the whole point that he got picked, is he has the tools. He doesn't have anything upstairs, like the motor, the basketball IQ. He's not in Minnesota. He's not in Sacramento, where it's just, oh, get him a different situation. Golden State is the situation. that's where play like role players go to get their career revive, to cut off ball and to set these screens and to thrive off these great players in this great system. And he's not just like mediocre like a Wiggins was in Minnesota. He's awful. He's completely unplayable defensively and offensively.
I saw a TikTok today that was saying, you know, let's not give up on James Wiseman. This guy has all this talent, but the Warriors is a hard system for him to thrive because it does rely on a good basketball IQ. You have to be able to read the plays. You have to know where to be. And so maybe if he was on a team that all he had to do was get the ball and roll and rebound and, you know, try to contest around the rim, maybe he could succeed in a situation that was more simplified for him. And it's sort of interesting that Andrew Wiggins is, I mean, he was like the guard version of James Wiseman or the wing version of James Wiseman. And he got to Golden State and they were able to improve that. He went from being one of the worst contracts in the league and one of the most overpaid players to a guy that, like, you know, you feel kind of okay about making $30 million.
Would a James Wiseman for Mason Plumlee swap be both a very smart trade and the least amount of trade value a second overall pick has ever had?
Yes. You know, we see all these mock trades, all these fan, you know, trade ideas for the Warriors. They always involve them like getting a center. That's not how the Warriors play. Like, why are you getting the Warriors a backup center? The backup center minutes you want mostly going to Draymond. You know, there was this big idea of the Warriors getting Miles Turner. It's like, why would they do that? You want Miles Turner on the bench in the fourth? Because Draymond's going to be playing the five in the fourth when it matters. So all they need is forwards. Like, Jakob Poeltl is a really, really good center. He's one of the best rim protectors in the league. But why the hell would they get Jakob Poeltl to, you know, there aren't minutes for him to play.
I think that would lean into a Draymond trade, which is just an insane idea. Mm. I was trying to put it together and how we could get him to Sacramento, but I think he has so much trade value for the Warriors. But I think as soon as he's off the Warriors, I don't think he has any trade value at all. It's a very strange situation.
The return of Harrison Barnes.
That's right. I saw a tweet today that said the Kings aren't interested in trading Harrison Barnes and they want to build around the core and try to re-sign him in the offseason. Mm. I assumed he just wanted to go, which I realize is just an assumption of mine because everyone whose contract ends, it just eventually just leaves.
Yeah.
The Knicks are the 24th best team by net rating.
Mm.
That's not good. What? That's not good for a team that kind of went in on this core. You expected RJ Barrett and Julius Randle kind of take that leap with Jalen Brunson, and Brunson has played well, but the team just is not clicking in a way that you'd like it to see. Right now they have the 21st best defense. RJ Barrett is shooting 39% from the field, 25% from deep, and 75% from the line. This issue has plagued him. He has moments where the shot is falling and it's like, holy shit, RJ Barrett's so good, but you're looking at someone who's shooting 41% for his career. Randall's taken a step forward. He's not the worst offensive isolation player in the league, which is good. That's what he was last year. I just don't think there's any value in any single Knicks asset. What's Cam Reddish or Quickly or Mitchell Robinson or the Fournier contract or Quentin Grimes worth? Like, where do you pivot from this? You've made the mid three. I don't know where you go now. And I still have Obi Toppin stock. If you just look at his upper body, he kind of looks like LeBron. And so just that's what I've been focusing on.
Yeah. What's more concerning is that the defense has been bad. Like, Tibbs teams always defend, but they haven't been able to this year. And like, one of their big signings in the offseason was my main man, Isaiah Hartenstein, who I thought would be a really good option for them because he defended the rim really well last year. And like, he has been pretty good, but they cannot defend for some reason. One guy that you mentioned, which is one of the biggest disappointments for me this season, is Quentin Grimes. Coming into this year, I was expecting a big step forward for him. Like, there was this idea that he was going to be their starting two guard because down the stretch of last season, he really showed some flashes as like an on-ball guy who could shoot reasonably well, who could defend, who could, you know, do something with the ball. And he's played 7 minutes a game for six games this year. He struggled to find a position in this rotation.
My brother texted me. He's at the Kings game. He said, if you make a video about this game, include these texts. Marvin Bagley shot 0 of 3 from the field, got hurt, leaves. He said, Shad shit. All right. That's the Bagley special. I hope he's not seriously injured, obviously, but there's one point I wanted to make. Dante DiVincenzo and Marvin Bagley are bad. It wasn't Sacramento. It wasn't Alvin Gentry. It wasn't Luke Walton. Those guys are ass at basketball. That was not the Sacramento Kings' fault. I just want to put it out there because everyone blamed that. They were like, oh, Bagley's playing pretty well in Detroit. Dante DiVincenzo is going to be him in Golden State. No, he wasn't. No, they're not. So a little mini tangent on stop blaming Sacramento for bad basketball players.
Do we want to talk about Bogdan Bogdanovic? Bojan is averaging over 20 points per game. He's 34th in the league in scoring. Is this an opportunity for Bojan to join the list of random one-time All-Stars?
I think given the Pistons will have 6 wins by the All-Star break, I'm going to say no. But yeah. They extended him, and I think that was a good move. You have a pretty good player on your team for the next 3 or 4 years. I forget how long the contract is exactly. And really quickly, Bogdan Bogdanovic hasn't played yet this season, but the Hawks do miss him. I think they're last in 3-point rate, which for the Hawks is really weird.
Mm.
They're utilizing John Collins like he's PJ Tucker.
Mm.
And yeah. That kind of offensive creation is going to be good. Are we going to press the panic button on Jabari Smith yet? Are we there? Yeah. Every time we come on, I'm going to ask you guys this. I asked Nate last week, and he said no. But now we're 16 games in. Jabari Smith is 10-7 on 31% shooting, and you're like, this is not good. This isn't going well at all. Yeah. And I still kind of wish, in a weird way, the Kings were able to get him, because the idea of the 6'10 like sniper who's good on defense is just perfect what we're looking for. But he has not been good for Houston.
Yeah, that's the point, is that the idea of the 6'10 sniper who's good on defense is great, but that's actually not what Jabari is at the moment, because he's been mediocre on defense and he can't shoot. Put it this way, like, if you compare him to Jalen Green, who had a really harmful season, as in, like, he lost the Rockets a lot of games, you know, like he was really bad in his rookie season from just a winning games perspective. But the difference with Jalen Green is that, like, you saw the flashes, like he put up some high scoring games. You saw him beat guys off the dribble. He was able to create space and get shots, even if they didn't go in. And sometimes they did go in, and he showed those flashes. Like, what has Jabari shown? Like, the dude seems like he can't dribble the fucking ball. Like, at any point in, I mean, I'm sure you're not tuning into every Rockets game, because that would be really bad for a person's mental health. But have you ever seen Jabari, like, do something impressive? Like, create a nice shot, make a nice play?
I really haven't.
I don't think I've seen him do anything.
But you know who I have seen do that every game for, like, 40 minutes a game?
Yeah.
Is Paolo. Dude's fucking incredible. He's so good. Yep. And the whole time we thought it was going to be Jabari at the number one slot, and we took Paolo. We're like, whoa, that's a crazy pick. I remember I was driving at the time, my brother announced the pick to me, and I was like, whoa, they went with Paolo. Like, that's insane. That was the right decision. And you can plant that flag now. This is not too early. Paolo looks fucking awesome, and Jabari Smith looks really bad. And it's not like, it's not close.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I came around on Paolo. Like, I got there really late, but before the draft, I did finally elevate Paolo to that number one pick. And the reason that I did it was I really struggled to see who he was as a player and, like, how he was going to succeed until someone mentioned Pistons' Blake Griffin. And, like, the numbers of Pistons' Blake Griffin and Paolo are pretty similar.
You didn't like my bigger Marcus Morris comparison? That was ingenious, man.
That's actually not bad too. I will die on this hill. Marcus Morris is one of the most underrated players in the league, because, like, he's a douchebag. Like, guys want to hate him, and so they disrespect his game. But, like, that guy just goes out there and, you know, gives you an efficient high teens and competes on defense.
Can someone please, like, figure out the hostage situation on Eric Gordon? get that dude out of here.
Yeah.
I feel horrible. Every time I check the roster, I'm like, yeah. I could not believe Eric Gordon has been on the Rockets for eight seasons. This man has to be like, he made some, they have blackmail on Eric Gordon. He never can leave.
The blackmail is $18 million a year of salary. That's the blackmail that they've got on him.
Are you with me in thinking that everyone on the internet is way too high on Şengün?
Yeah.
People treat him like he's Hakeem Olajuwon when he's just smaller Domantas Sabonis. Yeah. I don't see the large scale application of his skills, where on a really bad team playing 26 minutes a game, he's going to give you an efficient 15. But if you're going to lean into him as one of your best players, that guy can't defend the rim at all.
Yeah.
He's 6'9". You have to play him the center. He's too small. There's no contending version of a team with Şengün playing big minutes.
Yeah. Like, he is really good at what he's good at. You know, like, he's an efficient scorer. He's a good post player. Like, he's got some moves. He can score on the post, and like, he's a reasonable passer for a five. But to your point, he's also an awful defensive player, and center is the most important defensive spot. And so, like, what is his ceiling on a good team? It's like bench five. You know, it's like Montrezl Harrell. I actually like that comp. Like, efficient scorer, terrible defender. At the center, you have to be a bench player. Alperen Şengün is Montrezl Harrell.
Essentially. People don't want to hear that. Montrezl Harrell. How's Montrezl Harrell playing this season anyways? I really haven't. Like, is he playing at all? I feel like I don't see him very much. Let's see.
Yeah, he's doing his thing of putting up efficient box score numbers and not contributing in any way to winning basketball.
Are the Wizards exactly what you expected this season?
I mean, they're probably like a little bit better than I expected. You know, they're in the they're a playoff team at the moment. I thought they'd be like the 10 seed.
At the moment. I don't love their chances. Where's the search party at for Johnny Davis? What happened to Johnny Davis?
I mean, it's the perfect like symptom of their disease that, you know, when you try to be good, but you actually don't have good players, so then you end up as the 10 seed every year, and you draft in like the teens, and you just keep getting mediocre players, so you remain a mediocre team and draft more mediocre players.
Which big three is better? Brunson Randle and RJ Barrett, or Bradley Beal, Kristaps, and Kyle Kuzma?
Oh, the Wizards, for sure.
All right.
I mean, like, Bradley Beal's still doing his empty calorie offensive performance, but they have been good offensively, which is nice. They're a top five offense, at least.
No, they're not.
They're not?
No, they're not. Are you ready for 10 years from now to hear the Bradley Beal Hall of Fame case? He has 20,000 points, dude. Everyone with 20,000 points gets him.
You know a lot more about NBA history than I do. Like, who's his comp of just, like, career low-level all-star?
He's a worse Joe Johnson. Johnson so immaculately tiptoes the line of good but not great. It's honestly impressive. You think of Joe Johnson as a scorer, I think the most points per game in the playoff series he ever averages is like 22. If you ask Joe Johnson to get you 20, he's getting you 20. If you ask Joe Johnson to get you 40, go talk to someone else. Go ask another player, because you are knocking on the wrong door. He's not giving it to you.
Yeah, I like that comp. I started following the NBA just early enough to see, like, I was probably like Nets Joe Johnson.
I mean, if Nate was here, he'd probably tell us, like, you know, on like the Dead Sea Scrolls that he read about, like, Suns Joe Johnson or something, like 1997, when he was 25. I think we've bashed on every single mediocre team. We can talk about some good teams, maybe some positive things. The Celtics have the best offense in the league, the best net rating in the league. They're 13-3.
The defense has kind of come along a little bit recently. So, I mean, it's, you know, small sample size, but it's maybe an indicator of things to come. And I think all of us before the season predicted Boston as the number one team in the league. They've been the number one offense by quite a margin.
I ended up peeling away at the last second through my basketball predictions, because with the coach going and Gallinari got hurt, I didn't see it. But looking at it, Tatum is putting together quite a case for MVP, looking at his 30 points a night on 47% shooting with 4.5 assists and 7.5 boards. He is all over the place.
This could be like a weird year for MVP, but there's like a whole bunch of dudes making a really good case, but no one like running away with it.
Right now it goes Booker, John Morant, Embiid, Tyrese Halliburton, Donovan Mitchell, Steph Curry, Giannis, Jokic, Tatum, and then Luka.
Yeah.
I don't have any huge qualms with that. I mean, Jokic being third.
It'd be interesting to see if we see like some stat deflation. You know, we've got seven players averaging over 30 a game, and Giannis is half a point away. So if we call that eight, you know, eight players averaging over 30 a game. Was SGA in?
He actually wasn't, which is interesting. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Jokic down to Booker, so 3 through 10, it's 5% down to 1%. And then it's Tatum at 12, and then Doncic is 65. So Doncic is eating up a bunch. But I want to talk about Steph just for a second, because this is statistically the best Curry offensive season. Curry's been a machine.
And I don't think necessarily that like the talent around him is that bad.
Well, Klay Thompson has been single-handedly ruining the Warriors' chances. And I mean, like, being realistic, Klay Thompson's not one of the 75 best players ever. He shouldn't have been in the top 75 thing. That was out of the question. And this season, just, I get to have this. He's never going to talk about this again. I never have to deal with this, the Klay Thompson for top 75. Because I can just point at this season and be like, look, he's not good anymore.
Is part of you scared that he's going to, that the shots are going to start falling? That, you know, this career 40% shooter will be able to make his way up to like high 30s? And if he's high 30s, he's a lot better of a player.
It's totally possible. I just think he's really forcing the issue right now. He's taking 15 shots a game. I just don't think that's his place anymore. I think you could have traded Moody, Kuminga, and Wiseman for anyone in the league last year. Like, the trade value was just insane, and I just don't know what that looks like going forward. And you start to worry, well, the trade value isn't there, but also these guys may not be good.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week, me and Nate, like the fact that Anthony Lamb is like one of their E players really speaks to the fact that like these young guys who were supposed to be, you know, part of this unique scheme of maximizing the present and the future have been disastrous. And Jordan Poole's been hugely disappointing, and one of the big reasons that the Warriors haven't been able to succeed with Steph off. He was supposed to be the one. You know, Jordan Poole was supposed to be able to carry when Curry was out, and he's been fucking awful.
He has not been able to do that. Well, Dylan, any closing comments?
Let's get a prediction from you. Your boy De'Aaron Fox, first time All-Star this year?
I think he should be. I think with the Desmond Bane and Ja Morant injuries, that kind of opens it up for Fox. But with those guys playing, I don't think Fox is going to get that nod. But he's been spectacular. But part of it is he was spectacular when the Kings were losing. But when the Kings kind of started to get that rhythm going, he's still super involved, but the statistical dominance isn't really there, which is fantastic. I don't want Fox to have to average 35 a night to win games, but I don't think the All-Star nod's going to like crush people over the head, but I hope so. I really do. I think if the record could be good enough, if we can beat the worst team in the league without any of their good players, you know, maybe we could do that. I really hope we win that game, man.
Is it still just 12 spots?
I think it's 13.
Right, so you can have a maximum of 7 guards. I'll go through Western Conference guards. You tell me when we get to someone that Fox could be over, okay? No. So we got Luka, we got Steph, we got Shea. Ja may be injured, so we can Devin Booker.
I'll say no.
How many do we get to there? Because that's probably where the list
is.
It's Luka, Steph, Shea.
Yeah.
Maybe Ja. Let's say Ja. Devin Booker.
That's 5. So he's probably that 6 there, unless you like Lillard. So he might be right on the cusp there. It just depends on I guess Lillard's health, because Lillard left last game with some injury stuff with his calf and whatnot, something in the low, just muscle tightness, and then Ja, I forget what happened to him. I think it's big toe or something, or maybe I'm mixing up my injuries. But
This is going to be the year.
King. I mean, I remember years ago, the Kings hadn't had an All-Star since Brad Miller, and that was a huge deal. It was like you had to vote for DeMarcus Cousins, like, let's get Boogie an All-Star nod. Like, that had the city, like, DeMarcus is an All-Star, like, we did it.
Yeah. Do you want to guess what year was the last year where they had a positive point differential?
2005. 2006, yeah, 2005. we've had a bad defense since that season. We have not had a positive defense since the last year of the playoffs.
The highest that the Kings are ranked on defense since the 05-06 season is 18th.
Ron Artest is on that team. Just for a era reminder, how long ago, we traded Peja for Ron Artest. The Pacers flipped Peja for literally nothing. I don't know the details of that trade. Maybe it was a salary dump or something. But yeah, those guys are old now. Peja has a son who is as old as I am.
How?
Like it's. I'd be a little bit younger. I think he's about to go to college.
How? Yeah. Where is my math? What year were guys who just got drafted born in? 2003. So there are guys in the league who couldn't talk the last time that the Kings had a positive point differential.
That's true. But hey, this is the year. And the city just loves it.
Yeah,
with the beam and everything, like the Kings fever is real in Sacramento. That's why I'm happy to be here.
Yeah,
happy to be here.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I think the beam is like one of the coolest gimmicks in the NBA.
It's fantastic because you can just look and see that, and you'd be like, the Kings won. Like that it's like the fucking bat signal for Kings basketball. It's the most awesome thing in the world. Yeah. I can't think of something else, and like I just. Maybe Sacramento's. How did the Kings come up with that? How are we the first thing?
Yeah.
The team that doesn't win, that never wins.
Yeah. Maybe that's.
Everyone else had 17 years to come up with this because they actually won games. Yeah. Like, we're not going to have a gimmick about winning games because we're never going to do it. But now we actually have, we win some games to come up with the beam.
Yeah. All right.
How does Nate usually close these? Well, I forget what he says.
Oh, he plugs everything. You got to do the plugs.
I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode of the Hoops Temple podcast. Dylan, where can they find you?
Oh man, I normally have like a witty thing. Did you hear my one last week? Did you listen to the very end of last week's podcast?
No, I didn't catch the last one. What'd you say?
Nate said, "Where can they find you?" I said, "In possible cheers comments." Getting 60 likes on a DJ Augustine comment.
There you go. There you go. That's what it is. Is that, did you make that comment?
Yeah.
Was it about DJ Augustine catching straight or something? Yeah, I'll have to go back and find that.
Yeah, Bobcats legend, DJ Augustine catching strays. The people liked it.
They did, that was good. You can find me, Possible Chairs, on TikTok. You also can find me on the top of the Golden One Center, lighting the beam, Olympic torch style. That's where I'll be. Thanks for joining us, Dylan.